English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces kill 3 more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination has urged France to fully probe the recent killing of a teenager by police. And the U.S. says it will send cluster munitions to Ukraine as part of its military aid package. That's despite an international ban on the weapons. Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story in the occupied West Bank: no sooner Palestinians bury their loved ones than more have been killed by Israeli forces. Now, this was in full view Friday when 3 Palestinians were gunned down in just a matter of hours. Two Palestinians were shot dead during a raid. 3 others were injured while several were arrested, and later in the day another Palestinian was killed during an attack by regime troops in a village northwest of Ramallah. Several Palestinians have also been injured in anti-Israel protests throughout the West Bank, including in Al-Khalil and Qalqilya. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has vowed to avenge the deaths and continue resistance until liberation of the occupied territories. Earlier this week, Israeli forces conducted a large-scale operation in Jenin, where a dozen Palestinians were killed and scores wounded. Israel has been escalating its crackdown in recent months, killing over 200 Palestinians so far this year. Mick Napier with the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign says the Palestinian people have no option but to intensify resistance against the occupying regime.
What's new is the public discourse. The killing has been the killing has been regular or irregular, repeated since 1948. This particular government's by no means the worst. It's simply the most shameless. In the past, Ben-Gurion and the so-called Labour Zionists have cloaked their ethnic cleansing, their mass murder, in smooth words for their Western allies. In order to disguise what's going on. These guys today feel no need to disguise what they're doing. They're really blood mad, they're crazy, and they wish to accelerate the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. The Israeli army doesn't arrest Palestinians if they resist, it kills them. And if they have been members of the Palestinian resistance, then the Israelis would simply have killed them because they don't want to arrest anybody when they think they have fought back against the occupation army. This is a system based upon Jewish supremacy over non-Jews from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean. And we're seeing a spike in the killing. The Palestinians know that they are doomed if they do not resist. Not just the refugees pushed into Gaza, but now in the West Bank, and even inside 48, they increasingly know that their future is to be driven out, because Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and Netanyahu as well are sending signals to their political base that even those Palestinians who were trapped inside Israel in 48 have no future there, that they are tolerated until they can be removed. And of course, in the West Bank, we see helicopter gunships, we see missiles, drones, and so on. We're beginning to see the Gazaization of the West Bank.
A UN committee has called on France to conduct a thorough and impartial probe into a recent killing of a teenager by French police. Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination says that France should also adopt legislation which clearly defines and prohibits racial profiling. Committee says it's concerned about racial profiling and excessive use of force by police against minority groups, especially people of African and Arab descent. According to the committee, the practice leads to recurrent killings with near impunity. It also raised concerns about the mass arrests during recent protests. They erupted after a French officer shot dead a 17-year-old citizen of African descent near Paris. Protests have seen thousands arrested, most of them minors. Our correspondent in Paris, Rami Mazahari, joined us earlier and gave us a closer look at the recent violence that's gripped France.
Over this previous week of political-related violence, more than a third of the people arrested were under the age of 18. So this is what we saw last week was young people reaching their, you know, their age of political consciousness and political activism. So really the main question is why does this keep happening? Not just, you know, 2016 with Adama Traore, 2017 with Thiro, 2018 and 2019 with the Yellow Vest, not just year to year, but from generation to generation to generation. And why is nothing done about specifically the issue of police brutality? Well, when it comes to racial profiling, that was the one promise that François Hollande made when he was running for president in 2012. It's the one promise he made which targeted the Muslim community, because Muslims are targeted something like 7 to 9 times more often with identity checks. Hollande didn't do it. Macron certainly has been as right-wing as Hollande's predecessor, Nicolas Sarkozy. So we're here year after year, time after time, but certainly this last political rebellion, it really, really got the world's attention.
French Parliament recently approved a justice reform bill that's created controversy. Law allows police to spy on suspects by remotely activating cameras, microphones, and GPS on phones. The government says law will affect only dozens of cases a year. The defenders of rights, however, have been critical of the legislation, calling it an authoritarian snooper's charter.
It has been described as an unprecedented restriction on people in France. Lawmakers have agreed that the country's police forces need to be allowed to spy on suspects by remotely activating the camera, microphone, and GPS of their phones and other devices. The measure agreed by lawmakers covers laptops, cars, and other connected objects, as well as phones. It further allows devices to be remotely activated to record sound and images of people allegedly suspected of terror offenses, as well as delinquency and organized crime. Rights activists have slammed the measure as, quote, an authoritarian snooper's charter. A digital rights group has slammed the provision, saying it raises serious concerns over infringements of fundamental liberties. La Quadrature du Net has called for the proposal as part of a, quote, slide into heavy-handed security. In early June, the French Senate, the upper house, approved a controversial provision to a justice bill that allowed law enforcement to eavesdrop on suspected terrorists and criminals using their devices.
The message from the top has generally been one to support the police and to reinforce their powers. And it has to be borne in mind that the police have faced some significant challenges, especially in the previous decade, where France was subjected to a series of terrorist attacks. And there was a fear that the police didn't have strong enough powers to contain that. And so some of those powers were reinforced.
France has been rocked by violent protests, or the fatal shooting of a teenager by police. It took place in a Paris suburb more than a week ago. Thousands, including foreigners, were out protesting and were arrested. Authorities are now considering putting restrictions on social media as part of measures to quell what they're calling riots.
Moreover, senators approved the provision in the bill allowing law enforcement to track devices' location if the owner is suspected of committing a crime. The measures come amid unprecedented protests across France over the killing of a 17-year-old boy of Algerian origin by police in late June. Nahal's killing renewed old grievances regarding police brutality and racial profiling. It is estimated that some 3,400 to 4,000 people were arrested, which included more than 1,200 minors. Most of those arrested in the recent unrest had no previous criminal record. Meanwhile, there are concerns about restrictions on social media in France. France's digital minister, Jean-Noël Barrot, has announced that from August 25th, Paris will introduce mandatory measures censoring the work of social networks in the country. According to the French minister, President Macron had urged him to, quote, put maximum pressure on social networks. Barrot has also proposed to the Senate the creation of a working group to address measures to be taken in the event of mass protests and riots. Earlier, Macron claimed that protesters were using Snapchat, TikTok, and Telegram to film violent events and to organize illegal gatherings.
Enfin, les plateformes, les réseaux sociaux...
Social media platforms play a significant role in the events of the past few days. We have on several of them, Snapchat, TikTok, and several others, both the organization of violent gatherings and a form of mimicking of violence, which among the youngest leads to a feeling of unreality. It sometimes feels like some of them are experiencing in the streets the video games that have intoxicated them. And this, the law, including over the past few months, has set out changes to parent control that we want to be fully respected.
Macron has also discussed the possibility of banning access to certain social media features. Macron has told about 300 local leaders that the country needs to reflect on social media use among the youngest and on the prohibitions that must be put in place. Comments drew the ire of many critics.
These incidents just keep on happening, but this time it was captured on video, and that's why people are fuming. But Macron goes to his Elton John concert, and then he blames video games for the protests. Video games! Maybe his police officers play too many video games, and that's why they pulled out their guns on a 17-year-old without a driver's license. And one of them said, I'm going to put a bullet in your head. Macron now wants to ban sensitive content on social media because it's embarrassing for him. But dare Iran ban Twitter or Egypt cut off the internet, then Macron and the West will spring into their usual chorus of that's censorship and that's a dictatorship, no freedom of speech.
The French government has been accused of conducting attacks on migrants, racial profiling, and religious intolerance. Police killing has tapped into the long, festering resentment of police brutality among many French minorities and have rekindled a long, painful debate about racial profiling by police.
The United States says it will be sending now Ukraine widely banned cluster munitions as part of a security assistance package.
In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
Ukraine is committed to post-conflict demining efforts.
As Sullivan said, Ukraine will not be using the munitions in foreign land, adding that Kyiv has provided written assurances the weapons will be used carefully to minimize any risk to civilians. This comes as the munitions are banned by over 100 countries, including key U.S. allies. Deliveries will be part of the 42nd U.S. aid package to Ukraine, and it includes munitions for howitzer cannons, Patriot air defenses, and anti-tank weapons. These bring Washington's total aid to Kyiv to more than $40 billion since the Ukraine war began February of 2022. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for the United Nations Secretary General says the UN chief wants countries to stop using cluster munitions.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so, as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
Germany has also opposed sending cluster munitions to Ukraine. Berlin says this goes against the Convention on Cluster Munitions that bans such weapons on the battlefield. Germany is one of the 111 states party to the convention. U.S. has not signed up to the pact. Cluster munitions typically release large numbers of smaller bomblets that can kill indiscriminately over a wide area, and those that fail to explode pose a danger for decades after a conflict ends. Now, great masses of people in the Iranian capital Tehran have marked Eid al-Qadir by attending the 10-kilometer-long party, which has been hailed as the world's largest celebration event of its kind. Farzana Ashurian has your story.
The world's largest Qadir celebration. In the Iranian capital of Tehran, a 10-kilometer route was lined with more than 1,200 stations to celebrate Eid al-Qadir. The streets were decorated with green flags and other decorative elements as part of the celebrations. The route was filled with people from all walks of life.
Millions of Iranians all across the country celebrate Eid al-Qadir. People from all walks of life celebrate this day together out in the streets.
Today is Eid al-Qadir, which is one of our biggest days. We have brought our children to get them familiar with the Eid al-Qadir celebration. This is a happy day and good things are happening today. Our children should learn about Eid al-Qadir from a young age.
Children are also a main part of the massive rally. They say they have joined the 10-kilometer walk for the love of Imam Ali. Families also take the opportunity of Eid al-Qadir to introduce the teachings of Imam Ali to their children.
We are here because of our love for our supreme leader and Imam Ali. We love Iran and Imam Ali.
I want to know Imam Ali because he was a good man. We want our children to know about Imam Ali and follow his path.
Today I'm here with my daughter, Maryam, and my wife. I've brought my daughter here to mark Eid al-Qadir together.
On this day, different programs and events such as musical performance and plays are carried out, and food and drinks are distributed as a part of the massive celebration. The celebration ends with fireworks as a reminder of the brilliance of this significant day. Farzana Shuryun, Tehran.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Several days of protests in France, and there is no clear indication of the end of the protests. And many believe that this incident is even more serious than the 2005 riots. Some believe the French protests are a form of political dissent expressed by a generation of teenagers whose lives are deemed inferior, cheap, and meaningless by the French state. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Tehran Times wrote in this regard, another death behind the wheel due to French police shooting. This is not a new story for the French. This time, the lottery of death was named a 17-year-old boy. The Niles death by direct police shooting has sparked violent protests and riots throughout the country. After several days, there is no clear indication of the end of the protest, and many believe that this incident is even more serious than the 2005 riots. In that year, after two teenagers were electrocuted while hiding from police, France was convulsed in turmoil for 3 weeks. One important difference is that, unlike 18 years ago, only the suburbs of major cities were involved in protest, while this time, major cities are also burning with the anger of protesters. Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, who had recently been freed from widespread protests against the new retirement law, sees himself in a difficult situation. The appearance of the situation shows that he is currently trying to take a middle ground. He is not fully cooperating with angry people, nor does he appear to be suppressing them entirely. Macron's critics say the current situation is the result of his government's policies on immigrants. They accuse Macron of being lenient on immigration laws and say that France is on the brink of a civil war, and the situation is similar to a jungle rule in the country. Some French media believe that the teenager's murder is a product of a law passed in 2017. This law, which was passed after the deadly attacks in 2015 in France, gives the police more power to control drivers, inspect them, and use firearms. Statistics show that after the passage of this law, police shootings of drivers have significantly increased. However, it seems that the root of the events in France these days should be examined somewhat deeper. The fire and anger burning in France is the product of a combination of several dark realities with high explosive potential. Lower-class teenagers and youth, mostly immigrants and people of color, feel that this incident could easily happen to them. They deeply and increasingly identify with the 17-year-old victim of this tragedy. The next point is a general emotional feeling that has been institutionalized and accumulated in this lower class. Despite all the protest, their voice does not seem to be heard, and apparently nothing is going to change. They have clear signs of this feeling of frustration. When they were in shock and grief over the unwarranted killing by the police, Macron and his wife were shaking their feet to the rhythm of music at Elton John concert. Another issue is systematic racism and high degree of police violence in France, to the extent that the police in the country have become famous, at least among the police forces of European countries. Africans and Muslims are the main targets of this aggressive and racist behavior. Another point that has a fundamental role in France's colonial history, especially in Africa, the wounds of French colonization have not yet been healed. The victim of the unwarranted shooting was of Algerian descent. 1.5 million Algerians were killed during France's colonization of Algeria that lasted for more than 130. And until a few years ago, the skulls of Algerian resistance leaders were kept in the Paris Museum of Anthropology. Although the teenagers in the suburbs of Paris are fourth-generation immigrants of African descent, the heavy shadow of French colonial crimes still weighs heavily on their identity. Attaching the metro line to these poor suburbs does not heal this old wound. The fire and anger of 2005 ended after 3 weeks with a state of emergency, travel ban, and imprisonment of those who ignored it. Perhaps the French government can once again use the same tactic to control the fire caused by the unwarranted killing, but this fire will not be extinguished, and it waits for another spark.
Food for thought.
Salam, and in fact, plenty of salams to you all on the occasion of the day on which God Almighty perfected religion by ordering His last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, to declare Imam Ali peace upon him as the vicegerent while returning from his farewell Hajj pilgrimage. So let us contemplate upon an aphorism by the leader of the pious, Imam Ali peace upon him. Failures are often the results of timidity and fears. Disappointments are the results of bashfulness. Hours of leisure pass away like summer clouds. Therefore, do not waste opportunity of doing good.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle.
Today's lesson, generosity. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of generosity in the Islamic lifestyle. We see that according to the Islamic teachings, it is praised to be generous, and the generosity is being praised in the Islamic teachings. Whereas there is another character which is known as niggardliness, and this is known as a bad quality, which is the opposite of generosity. Now, why generosity is being praised? It is because that when someone is living a social life, he has family, he has friends, he has parents, he's working, obviously in a society where there are other groups of people, there are some needy people, and if the person is not generous and he does not show the generosity, then obviously the society does not advance. For the advancement of the society, for the advancement of the people, in order to show the respect to other people, to humanity, it is necessary for people to be generous and to show the generosity. And that's why we see that who shows generosity, they are praised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The Ahlul Bayt or the Prophet, they have praised the one who had the generosity. But on the other hand, those who were niggardless, those who showed the niggardliness, they were known as someone who has destroyed the dignity, the one who destroyed the honor of the others, and those who have oppressed the others. So therefore, it is necessary to have the generosity in our routine life, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of generosity in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that it is praised to be generous and the generosity has been praised in the Islamic teachings. The reason is that the person who shows the generosity, obviously he helps people, he helps his family members. But this generosity also have limits. The open-handedness or to be an open hand, it has the limits. We should not cross those limits and become extravagant, which is known as musrif, the one who wastes. So we should not perform the extravagancy. Rather, we need to preserve this generosity within its limits. On the other hand, it is also said to beware of being niggardly. The reason is that the niggardly always has been the main cause of destruction for those who were before us in the nations. When we look at the Quranic teaching, it is said that those who were before us, it was the cause of destruction for them. The reason is that it orders them to say or tell lies, and they obeyed. It orders them to oppress the others, and therefore we see that they have oppressed them by stopping giving people, by stopping giving charities, by stopping helping their family members. And also it orders them to ignore the family ties, and that's why we see that they did not have the family ties. Their family were oppressed. The society, their neighbors were oppressed. The poor and needy people were oppressed. And wherever there was a need, they lied and they refused to help people. Therefore, we must have the generosity and avoid the niggardliness so that we can have a good society that is going towards the perfection, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Carpets woven with love.
Part 3.
If the Pazaric rug showed that the history of carpet weaving in Iran goes back 2,400 years ago, these findings showed carpet weaving in the Iranian plateau goes back to more than 3,000 years ago. But it was not just the discovery of the Sumba Valley in Turkmenistan that changed our knowledge of the history of carpet with the discovery of weaving tools. At the same time, in Iran, a fatal accident resulted in a great change. In 1354, rain and flood in Fars province caused an ancient grave to come out from under the ancient mud. The person who discovered this ancient grave was a Kashkai man, and the location of this grave was in the northwest of Rajed, near Kamfaruz. The important point was the object that was found in this grave. Iranian linguist Ali Hassouri later obtained its specifications by examining that object, something like a bayonet, but very delicate, which could not be used for striking and was probably only used for cutting. Another tool was a kind of needle called jafalduz with a round head and 45 centimeters long. These graves belonged to women, just like the ones discovered in Turkmenistan. Another strong indication of the presence of carpet weaving in the Iranian plateau. From Pazaric in the valleys of Serbia to the Sumba Valley in Turkmenistan, to Kamfaruz of Fars province in the south of Iran, traces of Iranian carpet can be found. But the ancient signs left of carpet are not limited to these. Some ancient signs are kept in the National Museum of Iran, like these carpet knotting hooks, which date back to 1300 to 800 BC. These ancient Lauriston knotting knives from the first millennium BC. All these evidences point to the antiquity of the art of carpet weaving in Iran, an art that fortunately was not forgotten in the course of historical developments. In the Parthian era, despite the long rule of this dynasty, there are no significant documents regarding the situation of carpet weaving. However, the traces of this era can be found here. The ruins of the ancient city of Qumis near Damghan. Between the years 1339 and 1349 AH, the city was subjected to extensive excavations by foreign archaeologists, which led to the discovery of this fluffy piece. This is a piece of fluffy carpet whose tufts are curly and not made of undyed wool. Although some consider this work to belong to the Parthenon era, there is also the possibility that it belongs to the Sassanid era. Today, this piece of carpet is kept in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. However, not all Sassanid carpets have been kept in the world's major museums. This picture is one of the most important documents left behind from a large Sassanid carpet. A carpet whose size and dimensions were clear, and if it was available to the public, it could increase our knowledge of the history of Iranian carpets. But this carpet was sold to a private collector for only $950,000 in an auction in London in October 2010, and now it is no longer available to us. 3 years before this sale in 2007, a semi-carbon test on the carpet showed that probably 95% this carpet was woven between 380 and 600 AD, i.e., in the second half of the Sassanid era, and with a probability of 68%, the more accurate date should be 420 to 540 AD. Except for this carpet, which was lost in the contemporary era, another famous carpet also vanished into thin air at the end of the Sassanid era. From Takkasra, or Khosrow Palace, the throne of the Sassanid kings, only this facade remains, which today is located in Iraq near the city of Baghdad. This facade, which the Arabs called Divan al-Madain, is one of the architectural masterpieces remained from the Sassanid era. According to Muslims' historical accounts, this famous carpet of Baharistan was spread in this same facade and this same palace, and after the Arab invasion, it was torn into pieces as a booty. Tabari writes in its history that the size of this carpet was 60 arsh in 60 arsh. Today's researchers say that this size is about 27 meters by 27 meters in today's measurement. Therefore, the Baharistan carpet has been an extremely large rug, that maybe until that time there were no such large carpets. This carpet was decorated with pieces of jewelry made of emerald and aquamarine. Some believe that the presence of jewels indicate that this carpet was not a knotted rug, but rather a kilim. However, a British researcher named Frederick Martin proved that a knotted carpet can also be studded with jewels. What he took as an example was this carpet, a studded carpet woven with gold in Topkapi Palace Museum of Turkey, which was woven by Ottoman artisans for more than 170 years, and the king sat on it in important ceremonies. Today, there is no trace of the great Baharistan carpet except in history books. Baharistan carpet, which is also known as Bahari Kasri and winter carpet, was lost in the course of the Arab invasion of Iran. But the fame of the Sassanid carpet was reached in the farthest known lands of the time. In a Chinese almanac that recorded the events between 590 and 617 AD, woolen carpets made in Iran were mentioned as taftan, which is probably a reference to the Persian verb taftan, meaning tufting. According to the information of this Chinese almanac, this carpet came to China as a trade item from the Sassanian land. The Chinese knew two types of Sassanid carpets, woven carpet and knotted carpet. The woven type probably referred to kilim. However, the knotted type referred to the art of carpet weaving. After the Arab conquest of Iran, the art of Iranian carpet weaving did not stop. Rather, it was combined with Islamic art on the path to progress. This monument, Al-Ukhadir Fortress, or Abbasid Palace, or Al-Akhudir, in the southwest of the holy city of Karbala, was one of the oldest residences of the Abbasid caliphs during their rule. The Abbasid caliphs used Iranian hand-woven carpets to decorate their palaces. Iranian carpets were so valuable and important during this era that every year different Iranian tribes sent 600 carpets to the Abbasid caliphs as taxes. This is a carpet belonging to the end of the 3rd century of the lunar calendar, which is kept in the San Francisco Museum of the United States. And it is the oldest knotted woven carpet in the Islamic world. This carpet was discovered in Old Cairo in 1365 AH. The style of the carpet's pattern is Iranian, and it is possible that it was woven in the northeast of Iran. After the era of the Arab Caliph's rule over Iran, several dynasties and local governments came to power in Iran. One of these governments was the Seljuk Turks, who came to Iran from Central Asia and ruled over different regions of Iran for 1.5 centuries. Residents of Tehran probably recognize the Seljuk dynasty with this monument left by the Seljuks. Togrul Tower in the city of Ray, which apart from a pigeon house, was actually a clock to show the movement of the sun in the sky. It is said that no trace of carpets has been found in Iran during the Seljuk era. But why? How is it possible that after centuries of carpet weaving, all the signs of the existence of carpets in the country suddenly disappeared in a historical era? A clear answer to this mystery has yet to be found. But another event is added to the complexity of this mystery. A small population of Buddhists live high in the plains of Tibet. Tibetan Buddhists worship in ancient temples. Tibet was occupied by China in the middle of the 20th century and is still considered a part of the People's Republic of China.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Riots and looting after a teenager's death in France have affected hundreds of businesses in the country's second largest city. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, the economic cost is mounting in France after the fatal police shooting of a teenager sparked widespread unrest. Some of the worst violence and looting was reported in the southern port city of Marseille, where 400 businesses were vandalized. The local Chamber of Commerce and Industry has revealed. All types of businesses have been targeted, especially those with valuable merchandise. The head of the Chamber for Aix-Marseille-Provence, Jean-Luc Chauvin, told France Info recently. An initial estimate by insurers has put the cost of the damage at more than 100 million euros, a number that will undoubtedly rise. According to Chauvin, for some stores it will take months to repair the damage, in particular those that were set on fire or whose stock was completely stolen. France has been gripped by violent protest after police in the Paris suburb of Nanterre shot and killed a 17-year-old French-Algerian boy identified as Niall M. when he reportedly refused to comply during a traffic stop. The officer who fatally shot Niall was swiftly arrested and charged with homicide, although the incident triggered a wave of nationwide violence that has since spilled over into Belgium and Switzerland. French authorities deployed 45,000 police, including in Marseille, after streets were overrun by youths who started fires and attacked officers, public buildings and stores. The number of arrests reportedly dropped to 157 overnight from Sunday to Monday in what was the sixth consecutive night of violence. A peak of 3,880 arrests were recorded on the night of June 30, according to the French Interior Ministry. According to Radio France Internationale, from car dealerships to toy shops, more than 400 businesses in Marseille have been damaged or looted in riots that broke out after the fatal shooting of teenager Noël M in a suburb of Paris, according to the Southern City's Chamber of Commerce. It estimates that 200 to 250 of them were in the very center of Marseille. Marie, who runs a clothing boutique, told Radio France Internationale, "They shattered the window and then kicked down the metal barrier. Then they got inside and spent 4 hours emptying the shop." Another shopkeeper, Sonia, said all that was left inside her menswear store was a single belt. She said, "I'm really shocked. I don't understand the point of smashing up shops." But the reaction of fellow shop owner Javier was one of anger, saying, "People here have lost their livelihood. My shop was gutted like all the others you see here. It's organized looting." Vandalism has been reported in cities all over France in several nights of unrest since Noël's death. In Marseille, as in most other parts of the country, the violence showed signs of abating, while police maintained a heavy presence in the port city with armored vehicles on the streets and a helicopter overhead. The number of people arrested fell significantly, 21, compared to around 70 and nearly 100. Marseille has been subject to some of the strictest security measures in the country since the start of the riots. Its mayor announced a ban on protests and ordered the city's entire public transport system, bus, trams and metro, to shut down. Authorities renewed the restrictions for another day, though this time transport will be allowed to run. "There is a strange atmosphere. We are all afraid for one another," one resident, Amandine, told Radio France Internationale, adding, "Not necessarily because we are scared there will be damage or whatever, but things can quickly spiral. I love my city and it's hard to see it like this." Historically neglected by central government, with some of the poorest neighborhoods in France and a history of drug trading and violent crime, Marseille has long had a reputation as one of France's roughest cities. But in late 2005, when other towns were gripped by weeks of rioting after two teenagers were fatally electrocuted on the outskirts of Paris while being pursued by police, Marseille remained relatively calm. The French radio added that as explanation, people pointed to the fact that the poorest parts of the city lie within a short distance of the center rather than being banished to the outskirts. To the high number of community-led associations, to initiatives to boost its economy or less triumphantly to the control exercised by criminal gangs. What's different this time round? Some have speculated that social media has made it easier for people to gather or to plot looting. Others point to a decline in community policing programs that has hardened relations between locals and police. No doubt many things are at play in the past week's violence, which won't be cleared up when the broken glass is swept away. City and regional authorities have announced a 10 million euros recovery fund, inviting owners whose business was looted to claim emergency payouts of 10,000 euros each. But those in the tourism industry fear that the unrest could have economic repercussions throughout the summer, as nervous visitors cancel bookings, especially after a coach carrying a tour group was reportedly attacked by rioters as it drove through the city. The incident prompted the Consulate General in Marseille to lodge a formal complaint. Midstream.
Resistance movement that the West Bank and occupied Al-Quds have been experiencing in recent years took a sharp, steep slope upwards in the past 2 weeks as a result of the epic Jenin operation. The month of June 2023 can be seen as the beginning of a new phase for the popular resistance movement in the West Bank. The failure of the occupation's army attack in itself was not the distinguishing feature of Jenin's firmness of the free battle, for which the Zionist Hebrew press chose the name Battle of Jenin. Rather, the qualitative development was the emergence of sophisticated explosive devices in addition to the resistance adopting new, more professional combat tactics by which it lured the attacking forces into ambushes with explosive devices, was something that the West Bank had not seen for many years. So much so that the Hebrew press likened what its occupation army was exposed to in the Jenin camp to what it was exposed to in southern Lebanon during times of occupation. Fast forward 1 week later, on Monday, June 26, a clip circulated social media went viral showing an attempt to launch two homemade rockets from Jenin towards the usurped Ramon illegal colonial settlement in the Gilboa area. Israeli media described the event as a dangerous and advanced development. This progress in the resistance action imposes on the Palestinian resistance and its supporters urgent requirements that must be fully adhered to. As many data indicate, after the Battle of Jenin, the possibility of the enemy resorting to a military escalation in the north of the West Bank, and against the Jenin camp in particular. And it was not a surprise to anyone that it actually was kick-started on Monday, July 3rd. Till the writing of this report, the invasion is still ongoing and the resistance is showcasing unwavering steadfastness and firmness. The occupation has always been expressing its serious concern that the resistance movement in the West Bank will reach the stage of a comprehensive third intifada. Not to mention that the occupation cannot tolerate the development of the resistance situation in the West Bank into a similar situation to that in Gaza. So how about if we take into account some of the intelligence information received from Jordan about serious efforts by the resistance to introduce drone weapons into the West Bank? This means that the next stage for the West Bank is considered extremely dangerous, as the resistance movement in it is still young and is not enough for it to intensify support by means of steadfastness, including money and equipment only. Rather, what it is required to provide it is an effective protection network for the resistance internally and regionally, so as to provide it with a cover in the face of the encroachment of the occupation. This is done by drawing up rules of engagement based on the balance of deterrence that currently exists